I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in. It is overtime. 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you deep into the evening, taking you to 10 o'clock. It's a fun night for sports. Wasn't fun at Nationals Park earlier today. It was a little bit of a snooze fest for most of the game for the Nationals and the Marlins, the Nats. I mean, if this isn't the most baseball thing ever, the Nationals were playing really good, getting a couple of games above 500, took two of three in Atlanta, took a couple from Cleveland, win the series over the weekend against the Padres. Feeling good. Here come the Miami Marlins, a team that's not very good, and what do you know, you get swept by the fish. So unfortunately, the Nationals fall back below 500, but they'll look to get it going. Where they've been best this season on the road, they'll take on Arizona for three starting on Friday, and then they'll be in San Francisco before they're back home the following weekend against the Seattle Mariners, I believe. So the Nationals hopefully getting going in this road trip. They play better away from home, so hopefully it's something that'll get them going. All right, there's plenty to get into tonight. Obviously, the NBA Finals get underway tonight. We'll talk about that a little bit right before tip-off. Tip-off set for around 8:30. We'll get into some NBA Finals talk around 8 o'clock. I want to play you a couple of interviews that I was able to do the last couple of days. I was out at Commander's OTAs, so I'll give you some of my takeaways from that momentarily, but also had a chance to catch up with Jalen Lane, so you hear that a little bit later on in the show. Also had a chance to catch up with Cade Cavalli pregame today, so you hear that conversation as well. I thought Cade's really insightful starting pitcher for the Nats now that, you know, he's come through a lot of adversity, but to get to the point that he's at now, he's just a part of the staff. Like, there's not much to think about. He's pitching every fifth day, going to the hill, doing his thing, and now you're thinking about how he can improve and get better versus thinking about, you know, health and those sorts of things. So good to see Cade Cavalli pitching well, even though he struggled a little bit in the first game of this series. You know, he was still able to give you five innings after a really tough start to his outing. So credit to Cade Cavalli on that one. You'll hear that interview a little bit later. And we'll also get into the Brandon Ayuk news today. We'll get into that at 7 o'clock. But first, just something to kick us off, I want to talk a little bit about what I saw at OTAs yesterday, because I do want to dive deep into the Brandon Ayuk discussion and whether that's the right move. I got some audio we'll play for you from Ted Nguyen, who joined our sister station out in San Francisco talking about Brandon Ayuk. So if you want to go ahead and hop on the phone lines, feel free. It'll be open throughout the show, 800-636-1067. No guests tonight, just you guys if you want to hop in again at any point, 800-636-1067. But I want to start with some OTA notes from some of the things that I saw out at practice yesterday, and then we'll get into the Ayuk stuff at 7 o'clock. But Terry McLaurin, I think it can't be overstated how important he is to this football team. I think we saw that last season. Just his leadership, the professional that he is. I mean, if there's anything that this whole Ayuk situation should make you feel, regardless of whether you want Ayuk or not, should make you thankful for Terry McLaurin. Should make you thankful for a guy who is a really good receiver. We can argue about where he ranks in terms of top receivers, but that's not important. The important part about Terry McLaurin is he's not been a diva. Even though last season there were some more diva-like things that Terry did, they weren't over the line at any point, in my opinion. They were some things that were a little out of character with some of the stuff that he was doing while he was trying to get the new contract, but there wasn't anything that was excessive and something that really changed your view of Terry McLaurin, the leader. This year, especially, though, coming back, not having to deal with any of that stuff. I mean, he even talked about it in his presser at OTAs yesterday, saying it's not something that I, you know, forget about. It's not something that I pretend never happened, but I learn from it. I don't look at adversity as a bad thing. It's something to learn from. So I think having him around, having him be a leader in that locker room for the guys this offseason, part of the program, and then being there fully for training camp to work with Jaden, it was something I noticed in the first phase of OTAs last week, just the conversations that him and Jaden were having and ways that they could get better and talking through stuff. And now seeing him just be able to be a leader again on this football team as he's out there in the offseason, I think is massive. So that was one of the takeaways, and I do want to talk about that a little bit later, a little more in depth, some of the stuff about Terry McLaurin and his usage in this offense. Dan Quinn talked about that. Terry talked about this. So we'll hear about that in the 8 o'clock hour. But a couple of other things that I really like that they're doing. This is new, and this isn't something that's new to the NFL, but it's new to the Commanders. Some of the quarterbacks were wearing GoPros on their helmets. And this is something that, if you remember Hard Knocks a couple of years ago with the Miami Dolphins, this is something that Mike McDaniel was doing with Tua, and it essentially just gives you an idea of being able to see into the quarterback's vision of what he's looking at. And, you know, it's going to pan wide and show you, but you can at least get an idea, too, of, all right, he's looking here. There's no way that he didn't get through the reads quick enough. He never saw that guy. And it just gives you an idea of what they're looking at, and you can almost essentially go through some of the film after practice and say, hey, and you got to get your eyes here. This is what you were seeing, and this is what you should have been looking at, or various things. And you can kind of match it up with the regular film of seeing everything all at once. So I think that's a really cool thing that they're doing. I think that's going to be, you know, a big help for David Blough and this coaching staff as they try to get guys to learn the system and improve these quarterbacks. I think that's going to be a really big teaching tool. It's something that, you know, I bet you, looking back for Jaden, doing all the VR stuff that he does, I'm sure it kind of is a little bit relatable in terms of being able to see things again too. I mean, obviously he went through it in practice and seeing it that way, but I think it'll be a good teaching tool for the guys. So I thought that was interesting to see them do that. And then I think you're going to see a big part of this offense be off of play action and bootlegs and those sorts of things. And that's not shocking. I mean, that's something that we all kind of figure would be a major part of this offense when you hire David Blough and promote him to be the offensive coordinator. I don't think it's a shock that you're going to get more under center, more play action, some of the bootlegs, but just some of the stuff that they're doing that's very basic. They're not getting into, you know, game plan specific stuff right now, obviously, especially in OTAs, but even getting into training camp, they're going to wait and install more specific things after we're out of there, after the final preseason game. But they're going to just get the vanilla stuff installed into the offense. And a lot of the stuff that we've seen looks similar to what you would see out of a Shanahan-style offense. Looks similar to what you would have seen out of a Ben Johnson-style offense, where you're going to work under center, you're going to play action, you're going to roll, you're going to make everything look very, very similar, and then find ways to exploit the defense because of it. All of a sudden, a linebacker is out of a position. Here you go. Here's an easy throw for Jaden, you know, to the receiver right behind it. A matter of fact, you saw that a couple of times where, you know, linebackers have to come down to play the run, and there, here you go. Here's a dig route right behind the linebacker. It's kind of that staple play that the Shanahans love to run. The play action dig route right behind. That's something that's going to be a big part of this offense this year. And I think it's going to look much more like the traditional style of offense. And frankly, it's going to look like a lot what a lot of teams around the NFL are doing. And I'm curious to see how David Blough evolves as well, because that is something that you ask anybody out there that's out of camp, whether it's the players or other coaches or David Blough himself, and they talk about how smart he is and how much he's going to work with them. The collaborative process, he even mentioned that, which I really, really like. If we can, we'll see if we can get to that audio. Not sure if we're going to have time for that tonight. But I love the idea that he's leaving it open to work with everybody. I mean, he mentioned basically saying, look, it's why would I try to tell Marcus Mariota how to run the read option when he's run it at a really high level and he can give me some insight into some ways that we should try to run it? Why would I tell Terry McLaurin how to run the fade route when I've never run a fade route in the NFL, but he has? So just little things like that, I'm very curious to see how he does and the ways that he's able to innovate, because something that has set a guy like Sean McVay apart from some of the other guys is they're able to run these styles of schemes, and everybody's going to have their own variation of that Shanahan scheme. But something that McVay is really, really good at, and part of why he's still one of the leading coaches in the league, is he's able to innovate and find different things and find the trends of where you can get better. And this is something we talk about with baseball a lot. We talk about this a lot with the Nationals. You know, I talk about it all the time because of how closely I cover that team. And it's finding where, you know, the league is a little bit misvaluing this or undervaluing this or isn't using this to its fullest, or everybody's overdoing this. Let me see if I can maybe beat it with this little change. And Sean McVay is very good about doing that on the offensive side of the football, where he was the one that really got back into the heavy packages that you're seeing now become a trend in the NFL again, where you're running two and three tight end sets. I mean, it was getting to a point where it was, You know, you're going to have the one tight end, and you're going to run three receiver sets, and you're going to line up in the guns. And now let's get back under center. Let's go heavy packages, and we're going to try to throw it out of three tight end sets, and we're going to try to run it out of one tight end sets because we're going to try to dictate your defensive personnel. That's something that Sean McVay is really good at. I'm curious to see the way that everybody talks about David Blau and how smart he is. Is he able to find some trends and some different things that he can do to exploit the defense and get better? So I think that's very noticeable. I think the conversations that all those guys have, the collaborative effort, I think is going to be really, really good for this team, and I'm curious to see how they do. And if you ask me today how I feel about David Blau being the offensive coordinator versus when that news was first announced, I feel 100 times better, and that's not even an exaggeration. And I know I was generally kind of down on that move compared to everybody else, but just listening to how everybody talks about him, the process of how they're trying to build this thing out, how he's even discussed it, I think this being a collaborative effort makes it so it's not so overwhelming for a guy taking over for his first year. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll give you some more of my takeaways. I want to look on the defensive side of the football. I like how hands-on Durante Jones is being as well, and I'm excited to see how that scheme's going to look. So I'll give you some of my takeaways from OTAs on the defensive side of the ball. I was out there at practice yesterday. Also want to get into the Brandon Ayuk discussion. We'll do that coming up at 7 o'clock. Toby Altizer with you on Overtime on The Fan.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Plenty to talk about. We'll get into the Brandon Ayuk discussion coming up at 7 o'clock. If you'd like to vote on my poll, which is getting such little amounts that I'm not even going to be able to reference it. Wes, do you think I should reference a poll that has three votes?
Of course. Give them a shout.
Do you think this is a definitive?
It's about the little guys.
Do you think this is a definitive? Well, it's my poll, so I'm the little guy. I'm the one that doesn't matter.
Apparently. Oh, see, I thought you'd have like thousands of people on your poll.
Sure. I've got three. So if you'd like to go vote at Toby_Altizer on X, do you want the Commanders to bring in Brandon Ayuk if/when he is released by the 49ers? Yes or no? Pretty simple question. Go vote on it so I can get a better feel for what Commanders fans are feeling. Currently, I've got two no votes and one yes vote. But go check that out. And yes, I know the underscore is annoying in my name. But apparently at Toby Altizer is suspended on X. So if anybody out there was using my name for whatever reason on X, thanks a lot. I can't use it. I have to go with the underscore. Regardless, we'll get into the Brandon Ayuk discussion coming up at 7 o'clock. So you want to hop in, 800-636-1067, or at the very least, at least chip in on the poll on the old X machine. All right, so we're continuing on OTAs. Practice was open to the media yesterday. Was out there, and just a couple of things that I noticed. Had the chance to be out there for phase one of OTAs last week, now getting to see phase two this week, and one of the things that I noticed immediately, and it was something that I wanted to focus on, was just trying to see the different guys that were new to this team and just seeing how they move. I mean, there's only so much you can take away from OTAs, and it's not like something where you can sit there and break it all down and I can make some overarching opinion or anything like that. I can, you know, only see what the guys are doing running around in shorts and a t-shirt, but you can still get at least a little idea of how guys are moving, guys' size, those sorts of things. And one of the guys that immediately popped to me is Adafe Owe. And he should, because you spent $100 million on this guy, so he should pop. But Adafe Owe, I think, is a lot bigger than I expected. I knew he was going to be a nice addition off of the edge. I thought he was going to be able to help this team out, long arms, those sorts of things, and be a good edge rusher. And you saw him really come on last season after he was traded away from Baltimore to LA. But he's someone that I was almost wowed by how big he was to go along with the burst. You know, there's a play where one of the quarterbacks kept it on a read option type play, and he would have been able to close that down And just the size that he has, the length that he has off the edge, I think he's going to be able to play the run, set that edge, as well as being impactful against the passing game with that rush. I mean, he's just a lot bigger than I thought with that burst. And so that's someone that I'm really intrigued to see how he does with this scheme. He was obviously their biggest offseason addition in terms of free agents. So curious to see how he does. But then also off of that, it's funny because most people like the video that I put out on the fan page, and it wasn't a whole lot to take from it. Although, and I see some people trying to make a lot of Leo Chenal and Frankie Louvu working together as a tandem. I'm interested to see how they work their linebacker rotation, but Sonny Styles is going to be a major part of this defense, obviously, being the number 7 overall pick. But it's so noticeable just watching their practices, and maybe not in the specific clip that I'm able to post. Just a word of advice for people that are, you know, trying to say stuff. I saw Mitch Tischler was getting clowned for some of the stuff, too, with, oh, Rashad White is fast, and they'd look at the clip and go, you don't look fast in the clip. We can't post everything from practice, guys. That's not something we're allowed to do. I can't record all of their plays. So we get to see some stuff, and that's why when we relay it, we're telling you. We're just trying to help you out in a way. It's not obviously talking about that specific clip necessarily. But watching their linebackers, way faster. Way faster, able to do way more. And it's not a knock on Bobby Wagner because he filled a role for this team. He was very helpful, a great leader, and helped this team get going in the right direction. But it's going to be noticeable week one when you turn this football team on. You're like, oh, okay. Their linebackers are way more mobile, able to do a lot more. Moving, covering, getting downhill in the run game. Like, they're just going to be able to do so much more with this linebacking core this year. And they're going to have to because Durante Jones is going to ask a lot of them. But you're going to notice it immediately. The speed on this team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think is going to be very noticeable. It's going to be a lot different. We'll see if it's actually effective or not. That's something still to be determined. But you'll definitely notice a difference in the team's speed on the defensive side of the football, especially at that linebacker position. All right, let's get into the Brandon Ayuk discussion. Do you want to see him here? Are you out on him? How do you feel about it? 800-636-1067. We'll give you the latest on what happened today with Ayuk. And we'll talk about what he could add or if even the Commanders should add him to the wide receiver core. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 10 o'clock. You want to hop in? 800-636-1067. So, big news today is Brandon Ayuk. And we've kind of tabled some of the discussion around Ayuk a little bit because of the fact that there's not really news. And at some point, the same conversation over and 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 over again gets a little bit old for you and us. So you table it a little bit. But with the news today coming out that, if you haven't heard, a warrant was put out for Ayuk's arrest in Northern California. And it was the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office that issued an arrest warrant on misdemeanor of exhibition of speeding. This all goes back to the video that Ayuk posted for speeding by Levi's Stadium, going up to speeds of over 100 miles an hour. I don't know what the speed limit is through that area, but I think it's somewhere around like 40 or something like that. He's going 104, 105.
It was right next to their stadium.
Yeah, right next to Levi's Stadium. So he posted the video. Grant and Danny were talking about it. I agree with them that, like, I don't feel bad for you, dude, that you're the one who posted this. You're the one who did this to yourself. Now, he afterwards had just posted on Instagram after all this stuff came out that he posted something like people were mad or whatever. I'm not going to read exactly what he wrote. But he also posted in there a video of him speeding around a racetrack, which, if he's going to speed around a racetrack, I don't really care about that. Great. Drive fast around a racetrack. Just don't drive fast on a public road like that, 104. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, it's a speeding ticket. Let's relax. And I do think there is some validity to that. I'm sure a lot of people around America have had speeding tickets. One of the guys who just was big part of the trade on June 1st, yesterday, or 2 days ago, Myles Garrett has had a plethora of speeding tickets. So it's not to say that, okay, you've had one speeding ticket, you're now just a horrendous person and you should not be a part of an organization. But there's a lot of things with Brandon Ayuk. But I thought this was interesting. Just add this in. This obviously stems back to that same discussion that we'd had plenty of times about that dumb video that he posted driving by the stadium. But I think it just reinforces how much of a red flag bringing him in is. It's a massive red flag. And I think if you look at it too, it's not something like you're getting Stephon Diggs and he's dealing with all this stuff. Because Stephon Diggs played good football last year. This is a guy in Brandon Ayuk that last played in a football game on October 20th of 2024. By the time you kick off the season, that's almost 2 full years. Almost 2 full years since he's taken the football field. And I'm sure there's been workouts. I'm sure that Jaden has thrown him a football sometime. I'm sure they have worked out together or they've seen each other. And I think Jaden did a masterful job when he was asked about this last week. And kind of dodging it, saying, hey, that's someone I care about. That's a close friend of mine. That's someone I love. We're going to be friends for life. But I can't control what's going to happen for his football future. I thought that was really smart of him, the way that he handled that. But at the same point, when is enough enough? And I think that there is a clear need at wide receiver for this football team. So it's kind of tough for me where I sit in a situation here. Grant and I were talking about this while we were watching the game today at Nats Park, you know, going back and forth on whether they're number two options, because I think that's truly how it's going to be looked at for this team. It's not a number two option. It's a number two options, plural. If that's enough, or if they have enough guys that you feel good about, or if they have the right horses in place for this, because you look at the guys behind Terry McLaurin, and I think you could look up and down this receiving core and this depth chart, and you could talk me into a lot of guys having a good year. Like, could I believe that Luke McCaffrey breaks out in year three with this team? Okay. I've seen some flashes. I've seen him play a little bit better as the season went on last year, and then obviously the injury derailed his season. But say he takes a big stride in year three. I could believe you. Do you think that Antonio Williams could be a really big star for this team in year one as a rookie? I think so. So you could sell me on that. How about Treylon Burks? Former first-round pick, finally clicks in the right scheme. They know how to use him. And by the way, he is massive. Made a nice catch that the Commanders posted from OTAs yesterday. Okay. I could see it. Deami Brown comes back to the team that he had success with on a playoff run. And after it didn't work for him in Jacksonville, he comes back, works with his former quarterback who he was showing really nice chemistry with in the playoffs, and they kind of picked up where they left off, and he has a career year. I could see it. Jalen Lane breaks out in his second season, and you start to see some of those dynamic abilities on offense that you see of him as a punt returner. Okay, so that's, what, five guys I just went through that I could tell you, hey, I think they could be a big part of this offense. And I can see it on all of those. Also on all of those fronts, the most yards in a single season by any of those guys is Treylon Burks at 444. So what if they just have their career average year where each of them go for like 200, 300 yards? So you can see both sides of the coin there. And I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic just because I want a guy with a track record. When I go to sleep at night, I want to know, okay, I've got Terry McLaurin and another guy. I just want to know that. And it's not to say that those guys can't step up. But I want to at least know that I have that guy. So when you look at Brandon Ayuk, it makes it more tantalizing because of that. Because I'm looking at this receiver room going, I love Terry. I like the potential of some of these guys down the depth chart, but where's my number two guy? Where's my proven guy behind Terry McLaurin? Not necessarily worried about a Terry injury, but also in the case of a Terry injury. So Brandon Ayuk becomes interesting because of the fact that I think there's a lot to be desired, left to be desired from that secondary receiving core. But I don't think I can do it with Brandon Ayuk. I don't think I can. I think he still can play football. I don't know at what level. I think if he steps in here, he's still immediately your wide receiver too. If you took the off-field concerns away, one, he'd probably be still in San Francisco. But two, yeah, I think he would help this team out. And especially now when you consider a lot of the stuff that has added into it, all the off-the-field concerns, you're going to be able to bring him in for next to nothing. You're not going to trade for him, obviously. Nobody's trading for him. So when the Niners finally do decide that they're going to cut him, and at this point, nobody really knows when that's going to happen, but when you do, you can sign him for pretty close to the league minimum. I mean, you're not signing this guy for more than $5 million in a season, I wouldn't imagine. And if that's the case, then sure, you bring him in, and he can help you out. But I also do wonder what he is as a football player. Thought this was interesting. Earlier today on our sister station out in San Francisco, Ted Nguyen of The Athletic, really good football analyst, he hopped on with their show, Steiny and Guru, and talked about Brandon Ayuk. And I thought it was interesting to hear him break it down and say, like, look, we don't really know the football player that Ayuk is going to be when he steps back out on the field. Here was that clip from Nguyen on Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game out in San Francisco.
News comes out on Brandon Ayuk, the worse it gets. So I don't think they're going to get what they want as far as recouping some sort of compensation for him. I mean, it seems like Washington is pretty intent on trying to get him, but they don't seem like they are desperate enough to give up a draft pick, and everybody knows that they're going to have to let him go eventually. So I think this is a sad end to what was a very promising Niner career. For Brandon Ayuk, and we'll see what happens, but I'm just not I wouldn't be holding my breath that he's going to be the player that he was for the Niners, even for another team.
And that's the interesting part about all of this. We already know that there's going to be some baggage that comes with Brandon Ayuk, but what is the player that Brandon Ayuk is going to be if and when he comes here? Is he going to be 80% of Brandon Ayuk and what we saw before? Is he going to be 60% of Brandon Ayuk and what we've seen before? Is he going to be 15% of what Brandon Ayuk was before? We don't really know. And so that's another reason why I think he would fall almost into the category with some of those guys to an extent, just because I don't know what he is. Now, he can also have a track record of, if he comes out and plays well in a game, you feel like, oh, okay, well, then maybe he is back to what he has been. But you still don't know what the health is. He hasn't played in a game in a long, long time. And I think this is why I don't know why they weren't in on Juwan Jennings a little bit more of a sure thing with a lower ceiling, but something that you at least could plug in and feel pretty good about. And look, I'm not a Juwan Jennings stan by any means. When we talked about him at the beginning of the offseason and whether you would sign him in free agency, I was completely out because I thought he was going to get a ridiculous contract. That was not the case. He got a very cheap one-year contract in Minnesota, so I'm surprised that Washington wasn't in on him. And if you gave me one of the two options between Diggs and Ayuk, I'm not really that interested in either one of them. But because of the fact that I think that they absolutely do need a number two reliable option, I'd be much more interested in a guy like Stephon Diggs, who it seems like some of the legal troubles he had this offseason are in the past. It seems like that's kind of gone by the wayside. And if that's the case, then we saw him be effective last year. I haven't seen Brandon Ayuk be incredibly effective in 2 years, or you can make the argument three, because even when he was playing in that season, it's not like he was breaking out by any means. I don't know that he was on pace for 1,000 yards in the 2024 season. You know, it's just a couple of games and he could have gotten going, you know, after about seven games or so. But that's something I think is interesting, is I think they need a receiver. Brandon Ayuk seems to fit what they would need, and I think style-wise, I'll get into that next, but I think style-wise, he fits kind of what they would need and what would fit perfectly with this offense. But I just don't know if it's the right decision. What say you guys? 800-636-1067. Do you want to see Brandon Ayuk in burgundy and gold? A lot of us are just assuming that that's going to happen. I still kind of feel that way, even with today's news. And today's news you can almost look at as just piling on for something we already knew about. But Do you think that Washington should still go sign this guy? 800-636-1067. Also, go vote on my poll on X. Want to get a little bit better of a understanding of how people feel at Toby_Altizer if you want to go vote on my poll. Do you want the Commanders to bring in Brandon Ayuk? Again, 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. Toby Altizer with you here on Overtime, taking you up until 10 o'clock right here on 106.7 The Fan. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. Talking Brandon Ayuk. You want to see him come to D.C.? You missed the news of today. An arrest warrant put out for him from the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office for the speeding. The video, basically, that he put out months ago. Driving by Levi Stadium, going about 105 miles an hour. Is that something now that looking at all these different red flags deters you? Because, you know, there are the red flags off the field we've talked about. There are red flags on the field. You're also going to get this guy for cheap. The pros, because I can see the cons clearly, and that's why I wouldn't do this. But the pros, to play the flip side here, to play devil's advocate, you could get a guy for next to nothing who is fresh because he hasn't played in 2 years. Again, you can look on that on either side. But potentially, if he is fully up to speed and he's good to go and that knee's fine, then you could be getting a guy for extra cheap that is a former 1,000-yard receiver that steps in as your wide receiver too, is also buddies with Jaden, and would know a lot of what this offense is going to try to work off of, coming from a Kyle Shanahan-style scheme. And he wouldn't be expected to be a number one. And while Debo was really good for them in San Francisco, Debo isn't obviously a classic number one style receiver. Not necessarily that Terry is, but Terry's much more of a normal number one type of receiver than Debo, and so he could step in and be a number two receiver to Terry and not have as much thrown on his plate and, you know, allow some of these other guys to develop behind him. Antonio Williams could grow into his role and those sorts of things. So there are pros to it, but which side do you see? 800-636-1067. Let's start with John in Ashburn. John, what's going on?
Hey, buddy. The one thing we haven't talked about, because we've talked about all the red flags, the concerns, the physical health, the character, we haven't talked about which of those five wide receivers that you just talked about would get sent to the practice squad and potentially signed by another team. And you'd lose a young potential talent for what? What's the biggest you're going to get out of him? Maybe 1 year? Because he's going to get a one-year prove-it deal for IU. Sure. And who are you going to give up and lose because of that?
Well, so just
real quick. Who could be part of the franchise for years.
Yeah, real quick looking at it, I don't think that they're going to move on from Antonio Williams is on the roster, obviously. He was a third-round pick. I don't think they're going to move on from Lane or Burks. It would then come down to Luke McCaffrey, who was a draft pick of theirs, and then De'Ami Brown signed a cheap deal. I actually think they really like what he can give them, but I don't know that De'Ami Brown is guaranteed a spot if you bring in Brandon Ayuk. So I think it would come down to maybe a De'Ami Brown or a Luke McCaffrey.
And Luke McCaffrey, you're giving up the return game that he's important for you.
Yeah, 100%. So, no, I think that's a good point, John. Appreciate the phone call. I think that is something that they would have to consider. But at the same point, I don't necessarily feel bad if you have to move on from De'Ami Brown or Luke McCaffrey for it. And Luke McCaffrey does help you in the return game, but I do think that's a little bit easier to fill than other spots. Like the kick return game now, it's important. There's no question about it. But this style of kick return game, I think you can find guys to throw back there to do well at it. And especially with running backs, kind of it being almost a run play of sorts, just the way that it lines up. You know, I almost prefer running backs back there in some cases. A guy that's going to run a little stouter. I don't mind that. That's why I think Eckler did really well back there. But they've, frankly, their special teams units have been really good the last couple of years. And so Lane, I think, kind of is guaranteed a spot because of his punt return ability. And I think it's more difficult to find a good punt returner than it is a good kick returner. Not to say it's not important again, but I do think that a good punt returner is a lot easier or a lot harder to find than a good kick returner. So I think he's almost guaranteed a spot there. But if they have to move off of De'Ami Brown or Luke McCaffrey, I don't know that that's something that should preclude them from going after Brandon Ayuk if that's the guy that they ultimately want to be a part of this team. John is in Washington. John, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Toby?
What's up, man?
Hey, I think that they should go out to IU. But the only thing is, you know, like you said, you don't really know what kind of shape he's going to be in. None of that. So that's the only issue that I would probably have. You know, like you said, the money would be good, but just knowing what kind of shape he's in, you know, not knowing where his mind is football-wise. But I think it would be a good signing.
Appreciate it, John. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because it almost feels like a foregone conclusion that regardless of what happens, unless something catastrophic were to go down the rest of the way, Brandon Ayuk's going to be wearing burgundy and gold come week one. It feels that way. And so if that's the case, we can talk about the red flags off the field. At some point, though, I need to know if he can play football or not. And that's going to be the interesting part of all of this is it better be worth it to go through all of this ridiculousness to end up getting him, and he better be a good football player in the end of it. And I think he can still play. I don't think it's something where he can't run at all or anything of that nature. I think he can still play, but at what level? Are we talking at a wide receiver 2 level? Or are we talking at a wide receiver 4 level? Are we talking of a guy that can be a major difference maker? Or are we talking about a guy that's a depth veteran that can step in and fill a role for this team? And so that'll be something that's interesting to see with all of this is what's he look like after missing 2 years of football? It's a tough thing to catch back up to speed doing that. And you hope that he's fine. I would assume that the injury is in the past, but maybe there's still some stuff lingering. I mean, knee injuries, we've gotten to the point because so many guys have come back from knee injuries, specifically ACLs, that, okay, it's pretty common. It sucks when it happens because you immediately know that it's a minimum 9-month injury. But you just assume that they're going to come back and be just as good as ever. And if not, it's something you'll come back and you'll maybe not be fully back year one, but then year two after the injury, you know, when you're fully back on the field from playing, you're good to go and you won't even know that the guy ever hurt himself. But that's not always the case. We'll see what happens with this Malik Nabers situation, but I saw a video of him running around at a softball game, and you can take that for what it's worth, but he didn't look great. He didn't look fluid, and I get that it's June, and you don't kick off until September, but he didn't look like he could run routes right now, you know? So we'll see what happens with Brandon Ayuk, but it really does feel like they're going to ultimately sign this guy. And I want to get into this next, though. I feel like if they sign Ayuk, he actually fits what they need. I think Diggs could fit it to an extent, but I think this is the kind of receiver that they're missing. And if they add him, and he is Brandon Ayuk, again, just to play devil's advocate, and he's a good player, and back to being the guy that we saw in San Francisco that was looking like he was ascending to be one of the better receivers in the league, even if he's like 85% of that, I think he really helps out this offense. It's just I don't know that I have the confidence that he's that guy, and I also don't know if it's worth the headache, and that's why I wouldn't do it. But let's talk about that next. Is it worth giving it the risk because of the fact that he probably fits what you need? 800-636-1067. Do you want to see the Commanders bring in Brandon Ayuk after today's news? Toby Altizer with you in overtime on The Fan. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. We're about an hour or so away from tip-off of the NBA Finals. We'll get into some NBA talk coming up at 8 o'clock. It's interesting. The Finals are on tonight. I don't know that I felt the usual buzz around the NBA Finals, but regardless, we'll talk about that coming up at 8 o'clock before tip-off at 8:30. Knicks and Spurs. Should be a fun series. So we'll dive into that again at 8 o'clock. Right now, though, talking about Brandon Ayuk, you want to hop in, 800-636-1067. Would you be interested in going out and getting this guy with some of the concerns, or are you just fine with it? He's going to come with next to no price tag. You're not going to have to trade assets for him. He generally would fit in the worth a flyer category. It's just whether you think he can still play or, you know, if you think all the headache is worth it. again, let me play devil's advocate, because I've made this pretty clear. I would not do this. I would not sign him. I'm not all that interested. All the stuff that he comes with is just, the baggage he comes with is not worth it. I think the baggage you would get coming with Stephon Diggs, much more worth it. Much more worth it. Because, yes, he can be a little bit of a diva, but he worked last year with New England just fine. And the way that a lot of the beat writers, the players talk about him last season, I thought it was very interesting the way that they talked so highly of him. I think he would probably be worth a lot more worth it than what you're getting with Brandon Ayuk. And part of the reason that I'm frustrated with this is it just seems like this was their plan all along and they weren't willing to differ at all from it. They weren't able to move. They weren't willing to move at all with some of the stuff going down, because the fact that John Keim said that they weren't at all interested in Juwan Jennings basically tells me that one of two things: either they think they're getting Brandon Ayuk and that's kind of already written down in pencil on their depth chart, they just aren't able to announce it because he's still on another team, or they really, really believe in the guys that they have behind Terry McLaurin, and maybe it's a little bit of both. But I have a hard time believing they'd go into the year and this is their receiving core and that's it. I really do. Because you just don't have a number two guy behind Terry at the wide receiver position. And I know Chigakonkwo is going to be a big part of their passing game, but specifically at wide receiver, because they are going to play a lot of two wide receiver sets, I don't know that they have another guy that you feel great about. Again, not to say that they don't have guys with potential, but potential is only so good. I need guys that can be productive. I need productivity over potential. And for a majority of the guys that are behind Terry McLaurin, in their careers, they haven't been productive or had major productivity. And some of them haven't had opportunities. Some of them maybe haven't been put in as good of spots. Regardless, they just haven't had that productivity. So I don't want to just constantly be looking at it and go, oh, potential, potential, potential. I don't know. I just don't feel great about it. But here's the devil's advocate side. When I think about what they need at the wide receiver position, it kind of fits exactly what Brandon Ayuk does. Again, a lot of what I like to do when I'm doing a sports, when I'm thinking about sports, I'm thinking about different schemes, I'm thinking about different things with more specific in-depth things. One of the exercises I like to do is when I name a system or a style of offense or it's almost like I close my eyes and what do I picture? And that's how I kind of build out some of, like, okay, they can use this kind of a guy, they could bring this guy in, and immediately figure out how they would fit in. When you think about the style that David Blau is going to run, and obviously it's going to be a little similar to what Shanahan did, what do you think of immediately? For me, it's a close your eyes, under center, play action, dig route, 12, 15 yards behind the linebackers. And there's a really good receiver at that. A couple of years ago, Brandon Ayuk, that was his specialty. That's where he excelled with that Niners team, was running off of those play actions and finding ways to get open in the middle of the field, get him the football, a little bit of run after catch. And I thought he was really, really good in that role. And if there's a guy that I think is missing from this team, it is that traditional work over the middle of the field type of receiver. I think Terry can do that. But I think if you have a guy that you know for sure that is their bread and butter, and now you can use Terry in a myriad of different ways, because he can beat you over the top. He can run that dig route. He can run a slant. He can catch a screen. I think Terry can do a little bit of everything. But if you have another guy that can, that's his role, working over the middle of the field, that intermediate part, and now Terry can be used in a bunch of different ways, then I think you kind of unlock him. So that's the devil's advocate side, because I do think the type of receiver that they're missing is actually what Brandon Ayuk is. But that's a lot of assumptions being made, too, that Brandon Ayuk is going to be the player that Brandon Ayuk once was. And you just heard audio we played a little bit ago from Ted Nguyen, who joined our sister station in San Francisco, 95.7 The Game, was like, look, I don't know that you can bank on Brandon Ayuk being Brandon Ayuk anymore. 800-636-1067. Hans is in Virginia. Hans, what's going on?
Hey, Toby, how are you doing?
Doing great, man.
Yeah, I just want to say, do not touch Brandon Ayuk with a 10-foot pole. There's the physical questions. There are no mental questions. We know exactly what he is mentally. He is certifiably insane. So we don't want any of that in our locker room. And him being friends with Jaden Daniels is not a plus. That actually leads to more conflict. I don't think he's going to corrupt Jaden or tarnish him or anything like that, but he could conflict him. He could cause some division or a rift between him and the coaching staff or with the front office. So we don't really want that in our locker room. So
appreciate
I just want to say that.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Hans. That is an interesting point because everyone looks at it as a positive that he does know Jaden Daniels. And I kind of, that doesn't really resonate with me. But you can look at it on the flip side, like Hans is saying, okay, so he knows Jaden. Well, what happens if something goes south and you're having to pick sides here, or he's getting, people are getting butthurt about, you know, there are opposite sides to that, of having that relationship with a guy from college. It's not all just, oh, well, he knew him, so it's all going to be great. Same thing with Adam Peters, too. You know, I just don't want it to be something that, like, oh, we know better. We know better of him, and that's not him that's doing that. And we know him. That's not really him. Well, at some point, your actions speak pretty loud. And he has been very foolish over the last year with dealing with San Francisco. And I do think there is something to be said, because I think a lot of people go and look at what San Francisco has done, and they immediately look at it and go, well, it's not as if San Francisco gets off scot-free here. Because if there is an organization in the National Football League that I would say I look at as not treating their players the best and not always giving them the benefit of the doubt, it is San Francisco. We saw a little bit of that San Francisco mentality brought over with Adam Peters, and we saw that discussion with Terry McLaurin. They're willing to play hardball. They're not going to give in to their players. Even if it's not necessarily to the betterment of the team to an extent, they're willing to do it for salary cap reasons, to make sure they save that extra buck. But it's not always worried about team chemistry and those sorts of things. And you've seen that with Trent Williams. You've seen that with Brandon Ayuk. You've seen that with Deebo Samuel. And so I do think that there is a San Francisco side of this that is very interesting. But at the same point, you're the player, man. People are going to be fans of the Niners regardless. And I'm not saying that you just get to do whatever you want as an organization. But it's just very interesting that it's just assumed that because Jaden Daniels knows Brandon Ayuk, that that's just immediately the best thing ever. And, oh, yeah, just go get his sign, his buddy. Yeah, I'd love to play with my friends. I'd love to, you know, make sure that I have all the people I know. But I want to make sure I put the best football team together, too. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. You're interested in Washington bringing in Brandon Ayuk. We'll keep talking about that. We'll get into the NBA Finals coming up at 8 o'clock. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. So good. Let it play. Wes, you're an Ella fella like me?
Of course I am.
Me, you, Strobes, Ella fellas.
Let's go to a concert together.
I'd love it. Absolutely would love it. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock. What do you think of this Brandon Ayuk situation? You in on bringing Ayuk, or are you down on it? Because it seems like it's going to happen. We can keep voicing our opinions. It's probably going to happen. But I do think it's interesting that you get the news today. And again, it's not really new news in any sort, aside from the fact that the warrant's out. But I do think that, you know, Grant's had this take for a while, and I think it's a good take. Like, you get so enamored with how that you're still wondering if, like, you kind of skip past the, should we? You know, like, how are you going to do it? Like, well, should you be doing it? And I'm still not sold that they should. I do see the positives of it, but I just don't think they outweigh the negatives. 800-636-1067. Let's get out to Tim in Maryland. Tim, what's going on?
Hey, buddy. Look, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. And the reason I say that is for a lot of reasons, but mainly after the season we had last year, the last thing we need is any kind of possible distraction in our locker room.
Yeah.
Because it's not just his play on the field. It's how is he going to be in the locker room. Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking a huge chance signing a guy like that. You never know what he's going to do. You know, we don't need that. You know what I mean? It's just, we just don't need it. And do I think that not signing him is going to affect the way we play this year? No, not at all. You know, I don't think he's going to be that big of a deal, you know, whether he's on the team or not. And I don't give a rat's butt what Jaden Daniels says.
Yeah.
You know, Jaden Daniels needs to think more about the team, you know, and bringing somebody like him in, and always going to be a possibility there's going to be a problem. You know what I mean? That's what I don't like about it. And thank you for taking my call.
No, I appreciate the phone call, Tim. I think it's one of those things, too, where you look at it and the amount of times that they preach brotherhood in some of these things, and then you're going to bring in a guy that's nothing but drama, I just don't know if it's worth it. I really don't. Ellis is in D.C. Ellis, what's going on?
Not much, man. I'm kind of out on IU, but I think the thing is he might actually be suffering from some mental health issues, right? Like, think about, like, he literally didn't fight them for the money. Like, his mental state is probably at a really bad space. And so if it's like, oh, we're trying to save this guy's life, sure, bring him in, give him a chance to play, blah, blah, blah. But from a football standpoint, I could do without him, right?
Yeah.
Right. If Jaden's his brother, like, you don't leave your brother on the streets when he's dealing with mental problems. But at the same time, I don't know. It's a tough situation. But sure. I don't think we need him football-wise. He's not that good, first of all.
Well, and that's where it's tough, Ellis. Appreciate the phone call. I think that's the tough part is I don't know what he is as a football player. I think this discussion would be a little bit easier if I just saw him have the season that Stephon Diggs had. I might be willing to put up with a little bit more because I just saw you put up good numbers not that long ago. It's now been two full football seasons since I've actually seen him play football. And so that's the other part of it. I know I'm getting red flags off the field, and there's still a major red flag on the field because I haven't seen you play football. And so that's the really difficult part about all of this is you still don't know the football player you're getting to go along with all the baggage you know that you're getting. You know you're getting the baggage. You don't know that you're getting a future, a former Pro Bowler. You don't know that you're getting that guy anymore. And to his point about the mental health stuff, I can't speculate on, you know, if he's dealing with any of that stuff. Certainly if he is, I hope that he gets the help that he needs. But it's just one of those things that if he's dealing with stuff, maybe getting to a different situation would help him. And I think it's a really tough spot for him to be in because I do think that the Niners are playing a little petty with some of this stuff, but they also have every right to. I mean, both sides, with some of the stuff that they have done, aside from Brandon Ayuk, you know, speeding by and doing some of the stuff that's illegal, you know, like you shouldn't be doing that. But, you know, the way that he's acted toward the organization to an extent, he can do. He's well within his rights to. Doesn't make you look good, but you're well within your rights to not work out of the facility. You know, not rehab at the facility. You also have to suffer the consequences for it, and he has. And the Niners, on the flip side, have every right to basically hold him hostage here and not let him come to the Commanders until they exhaust every option. So they can still do this. Both sides have been petty to an extent. So it's not that the 49ers are without blame, but the 49ers are also the team that agreed to give you like $100 million, and you're not willing to show up and do the necessary things to get that money. So it's a really odd situation with Ayuk. We see stuff happen with diva receivers all the time, so that's not new. But I do think this feels like another level, and it's just weird to see how this is all played out on top of the fact that you're dealing with a guy who has been injured and hasn't played football since October 20th of 2024. It's a long time. It's a long time. And so if you're getting the guy that's a former 1,000-yard receiver and he steps on the floor, you immediately know that that's going to help your offense. You just don't know for certain. And for that reason, I would move on from that being a real option. I don't think that's going to be the case for Adam Peters and company. But I think the Stephon Diggs part of this makes it very interesting because, you know, in terms of baggage, he comes with some baggage, clearly. but he also comes with a recent really good season last season. I mean, Stephon Diggs last year was a really good football player, but you're also going to have to probably pay him a little bit more. You're also probably going to have to pony up some cash. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up, but last season, he went for 1,000 yards. If you look at his timeline, he went for 1,000 yards in 2018, 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23, had the down year in 24 with Houston, and then was right back up again in 25 over 1,000 yards. So he's shown you a track record versus Brandon Ayuk has not shown you anything in 2 years of football.
He did have an injury in Houston.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he had the down year, but he also had the injury. Yep. But it's just, it's one of those things that I don't know that I can go with Brandon Ayuk and that suddenly feels like it fixes everything. The only way that you'd feel good about Brandon Ayuk is when you see him on the football field. And if he goes out there and has two good games in a row, then yeah, maybe you feel like he's back to being Brandon Ayuk and you feel like you've gotten a steal. But if you were looking for more of a sure thing to help out this offense, because I still think that they desperately need a number two option at the receiver position behind Terry, I think Diggs is your guy. All right, let's move on from the NFL. We'll get back into some NFL discussion around 8:30. I also want to play an interview I had with Jalen Lane a little bit later in the show. But let's get into the NBA Finals. About to tip off in about a half hour. Who are you rooting for and how interested are you in this NBA Finals? We'll talk about that next. You want to hop in? 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you here on Overtime on The Fan.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.